If this penalty deliberation lasts longer than South Korean martial law, please contact your nearest race director. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
And then call your doctor afterwards. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 557 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And welcome to the podcast equivalent of three dumb bitches in a circle nodding, saying exactly. Because this is how we're going to end up talking about Formula One for the next hour or so. Because holy shit, what a weird-ass weekend this was. We'll be talking about the 2024 Qatar Grand Prix and everything that wasn't the 2024 Qatar Grand Prix, because a lot of shit went down on the track and off the track. Political warfare, race directors getting thrown under buses, and Alex Albon's wing mirror causing total chaos in the middle of an otherwise drab Grand Prix. So we're all going to try and make sense of it over the next 60 minutes and most likely fail. But hey, it's the thought that counts. Joining me on this episode of the pod, as ever, first up is Mr. RJ O'Connell. How's it going, RJ, sir?
I'm genuinely surprised that we did not go with like the somber opening for this episode, because a great tragedy has been inflicted upon sports internet. Flacco811's TikTok and Instagram have disappeared.
Oh,
just all of it gone. I don't know what's going on there, but man, that's a source of dopamine that we are probably not getting back anytime soon. That sucks, man. We can't have anything going into 2025.
Right. This is terrible news. I mean, for those who don't know, Flacco811 was a fantastic TikTok and Instagram personality that would often transition and compare moments and people in sports via the medium of the old opening jingle from Grand Theft Auto 4. It's great. If you ever seen some of those in other sports like football and Formula One, that's the person who started that trend, and his account disappeared a couple of days ago, and that's a deep, tragic loss for the sports shitposting community. Because we lost a real one, brother. We really did.
I would pour one out right now, but directly below this bottle of undisclosed soda is thousands of dollars worth of technology. And also, I don't want to stain my floor by pouring it elsewhere.
No, that's not a good idea, generally speaking. Also joining me is Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Hello, everyone. The good news is I'm feeling a little bit better. The bad news is everything about this weekend feels a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Well, not everything. Joe, finished eighth.
We got zoinks.
Zoinks.
Zoinks. Zoinks achieved.
I love
that. That was the only part of the weekend.
I love that we all just magically turned into Shaggy from Scooby-Doo there briefly for a few seconds.
Like Joint Scoob?
Joint Scoob? He actually finished eighth! Yes, that was an actual thing. Like, that doesn't even barely cover the top five of insane batshit stuff that happened during
this
Qatar.
That's an honorable mention at this point, man.
It's wild that we had to get it in, because otherwise it wasn't in our script. That's how batshit wild this race was. Yeah, Max Verstappen won. That's like the least surprising thing here, even though that is actually a minor upset in a sense too. We'll get to that. We'll get to how he almost had it out with George Russell at a steward's box. We'll talk about how a wing mirror caused total chaos and how it might have actually made a game out of the Destructors Championship battle. Esteban Ocon is gone a race early. That's something we've got to talk about as well. And we got to talk about stewarding, because we've never done that on this show. No, never.
Personally, Dre, I think the beehive, that's over. I think we now have to start sending those Asian yellow jacket hives into these stewards' homes.
Here we go. It's beehive versus beehive, comma Japan.
Beehive Japan. We upgraded it.
It's the Japanese domestic model.
No, oh, yeah.
I see Gran Turismo.
It's not a good sign when Mike in the chat goes up, but I thought we fixed it. Yeah, so did I. It was cute, wasn't it? We'll talk all about that and a whole lot more in the next hour or so, which I'm going to get this intro out of the way right now before all hell breaks loose. Places you can find this real quick, we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. You can find us on Facebook, same slash line, motorsport101. You can find us on Twitter at motorsport_101, aka Elon Musk's failed and sued business environment, now endorsed by Scottie Pippen. It's a weird time to be alive in
or whoever bought Scottie Pippen's account.
Do not get me started. You can also follow us personally there at DreHarrison101 and RJ O'Connell and at CBuckley917. And we are all on Blue Sky, in case you are curious as well. Just take off the numbers for me. RJ is the same, and Cam is still missing vowels.
Still the same.
Yeah, he's missing vowels. I'm sure we'll find them at some point eventually. Find them on there if you're that way inclined.
I used them all up yelling at this race on Sunday from work, no less.
Indeed. All of that and all that good stuff is on there, including our website, motorsport101. We can get all of those details and an extra bonus blog, an extra long edition of Dre's Race if you're talking about this shit. And a whole lot more over there if you haven't already. Check it out. Oh, one for you Marc Marquez fans out there as well. Stick around. I played God with his 2024 season. You'll see it out likely by the end of this week. Just throwing that one out there. It's a deeply enjoyable one. I like having fun with this. You'll see what I mean later on in the week. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content before it goes live to the general public. You can upgrade to the $10 version. You can get into the supporters club of our Discord server, and you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Kira, Jason, and Mike are doing right now. Thank you so much for your support as ever, folks. And we've got a new Patreon backer, Emily Harker. Thank you very much for backing us on Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Much appreciated. You've been able to afford several packs of Carlsberg because we need them to get through this podcast. So very much appreciated. Thanks for the support, Emily, as ever. Right, without further ado, let's get into the ripped off Band-Aid, formerly known as the 2024 Qatar Grand Prix.
Yes, indeed. To put it mildly, this was a roller coaster of a Qatar Grand Prix weekend. Hey, at least the season's almost over. Lando Norris gave up his sprint win to teammate Oscar Piastri on Saturday. We had a literal Austria 2002 moment, and this is barely like the seventh weirdest thing that happened in the course of the week. But after a spectacular Saturday turnaround, Max Verstappen qualified on pole position, but was then given an unusual one-place grid penalty after qualifying for blocking George Russell in Q3, despite not being on a push lap. This whole thing tore families apart. There was heated discourse, and in the end, it didn't matter because Max beat George to turn one to take the lead and led every single lap after that en route to his ninth Grand Prix win of the year, continuing to run up the score. His only real threat in the day was Lando Norris, but he was caught up in a batshit series of events that all began when Alex Albon's right wing mirror fell off in the middle of the home straight, just off the racing line, but right in the line where you typically want to overtake into turn one, aka one of the few good overtaking spots in cars.
Only. The only one.
The only one. I'm being a little bit kind here. Race control puts out double waved yellows on the straight. Does not call for a virtual safety car. Does not call for a full safety car. Norris ignores these double waves yellows and gets hit with a 10-second stop-and-go penalty, but only after Valtteri Bottas smashes Albon's mirror by running it over and the subsequent debris puncturing the tires of Carlos Sainz and Lewis Hamilton, forcing the safety car that came arguably too late. Well, at least we know that Max Verstappen still driver of the year this year, Formula One, right?
I have no idea how Red Bull and Max pulled this one out of their ass. That car looked more akin to a driftmobile in sprint qualifying and the sprint race.
Yeah, Max himself joked that it was like driving his dad's rally car when he was in the sprint, because he started from P5 and he ended up eighth by turn one and didn't really recover very much by then.
Couldn't make an impression on a Haas, dude.
Yeah, he could not pass Nico Hülkenberg in open air because his car was so undrivable. But as we now know, with the way race weekends are now layered, Parc Fermé now reopens after the sprint between sprint and qualifying. So apparently Red Bull threw the house at it development-wise, changed the setup, and all of a sudden Verstappen's got the fastest car in the field.
Absolutely nailed the field in Q3.
Yeah, nailed the field, qualified on pole, his first pole position since Austria, although it would have been if it wasn't for that one place grid penalty. We'll get to that shortly, because we have a lot of shit to get through here when it comes to stewarding nonsense. I'm trying to put this off a little bit longer, but it's... When the race came, ultimately it didn't matter. He beat the duel with George and Lando to turn one, and he was able to basically mitigate anything Norris could throw at him in terms of raw pace, just keeping that gap around 1.8 to 2 seconds pretty much the entire first stint until said safety car drops, which forced everybody in, pretty much except for George Russell, who blinked first on the on used rubber for the Mercedes. So, yeah. When that happened, again, Max was able to hold Norris off until Norris had to come in for a mild case of extreme penalties. Props once again to Red Bull's operational excellence, because whatever they did in between the sprint race and qualifying worked a treat. Tremendous work from the Red Bull sim department. Seb Buemi, eat your heart out. That man did work over Friday night and Saturday morning because, the difference in pace in that Red Bull, like, even Sergio Perez was competitive during this race.
They have dreamed the impossible dream.
Yeah, they had two cars in the top six.
His clutch blew.
Yeah, his clutch blew out so bad that it blew out just as he was about to take the restart from that safety car. And we all thought he just flat-footed and spun on his own out of incompetence. One more race and this is over. One more race and this is over for me, and I don't have to suffer through this awful, awful end-of-life experience.
Yeah, he says he takes another swing of his Mexican Coke. Yes.
local podcaster drinks his Coke the old-fashioned way.
that was the first time I can remember both Red Bulls being in the top six. It's probably Baku, which just kind of says it all.
Verstappen was very uncompetitive in Baku because they went two different directions on setup. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have bet anything on Max having a chance to win this race. And yet took the lead on lap one and never really looked back.
No, it was a flawless drive.
It was kind of a classic Verstappen drive in that regard. The Zarkon on two or three more meme.
Yeah, it was like a 2023 Max win, where maybe a late stage 2023 Max win where, hang on, the field's a bit closer. And like I said, Norris was able to keep Max honest. He was never really more than a couple of seconds back.
It was that 1.7 to 2 seconds, pretty much the whole... Once Max got out there, that was it.
Yeah, it was just like they were playing tennis with the fastest lap, essentially. Like, one guy would hit the fastest lap, the other would respond. Like, it was a chess match between the pair of them, really, because Qatar kind of plays into that. It's a track where you can't really pass, but it's such a high-speed circuit now because everything's a medium-speed corner. There is no second-gear corner around Qatar in these cars. They were like turn six to slowest corner on track, and it's a third gear corner.
With the year-on-year development on these cars, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, starting to hit the ceiling with these things. Mm. They gained almost 3.5 seconds pole time year to year.
The amount of downforce
with the same tires and the same engines.
Yeah, same engine, same tires. The cold weather helped a little bit, but with the amount of downforce these cars are now generating, they were 3 seconds quicker than last year.
Yes, which it does get cold in Qatar at night. Who knew?
when you run it in December rather than October. Big difference in climate. Yeah. And yeah, I love that the Qatari winter is apparently 19 degrees in pitch black night conditions.
Shoo-wee.
Yeah, that's 64 lovely. To the Americans out there. That's the winter.
That's not perfect that. Right now.
Yeah, I went for a walk earlier and it was a nice, I think, 38 in old money.
Ooh, brisk. Same as here, pretty much.
Brilliant from Verstappen. Honestly, not a bad race from Sergio until all that went down. And then we have to sift through the nonsense.
First and foremost, Zhou Guanyu finishing eighth, as I mentioned in the intro.
Everyone's on the board, baby.
Every team is on the board. Valtteri Bottas was a bit unlucky to finish just outside the points again. That stinks. Look, this drive alone is enough to save Zhou Guanyu's Formula One career, but I'm at least glad that...
He's not going out sad.
He's not going out completely sad.
Last two races have been a couple of his best in F1 because we know the Sauber's a fucking donkey.
It looks like they've genuinely made some development progress on their latest upgrade package, but it's just come along far too late. They look like a more competitive package right now.
They're a more competitive last.
It's something.
Yeah, it's... Congratulations, 2014 Sauber. You are officially locked in as the worst Sauber in Formula One. History.
Your 2022 Williams, congrats, you're slightly off the bottom.
We take those dubs. Everybody takes those dubs, considering who their streamers are. Now let's get rid of all that bad good feeling and go straight to the bad. Right. As Valtteri Bottas once famously said, what's next?
Right. I feel like, and I'll steer the reins here a little bit here, we kind of have to timeline these series of events because the news about dodgy stewarding started before this weekend had even started. As the journos were flying out towards Qatar in the first place, we got more news of yet more firings from within the FIA. The running score is in the double digits now at this point. The two major casualties this time was Jeanette Tan, who was deputy race director underneath Niels Wittich. Allegedly, she was about to inherit Rui Marquez's old job as Formula 2 and Formula 3 race director for next season, obviously because Marquez got moved into the main post after Wittich's fire in post-Brazil. She's been let go from the FIA. And the other one was, in shocking news, Tim Meyer, who has been a steward for the FIA, platinum rated, has been for 15 years amongst the FIA, one of the universally genuinely well-regarded, respected stewards in the field, and there's not many of them anymore. As the man himself said after he was, quote, fired by text message. One of Mohammed Ben Sulayem's assistants apparently texted him to say, your services are no longer required. Allegedly, the rumored reason is because of a potential conflict of interest, because you may remember the Circuit of the Americas race in Austin earlier in the season. There was a track invasion after the race had finished. It was early. It was unplanned. The race organizers were fined a suspended €350,000 for that track invasion.
That's a lot of wine.
That's a lot of PlayStation 5s.
There's a lot of PS5s.
Not quite as many PS5 Pros.
Not quite. They're a bit dear these days. But because Tim Meyer is one of the race organizers for Austin, he led the appeal against it. Mohammed Ben Sulayem didn't like this right to review and then fired him.
Compelling. Please face the wall now, etc.
And Tim said, quote, on the way out, they're running out of people that can do this job,
they're not doing themselves any favors, the FIA. They're literally running out of people to do those jobs.
Yeah.
I know how hard both those jobs are. I like Rui a lot, but it'll put him under incredible pressure. There aren't a lot of platinum level FIA race directors, which is the FIA's highest level certification. I'm one of them. It's a lot of work. If you're doing the job right, you wake up every day with an ulcer, think about all the various things you need to be thinking about.
Well, the line that gets me in his statement is also, for a federation that relies on volunteers to fire by text somebody who has made a significant contribution, does not speak well of the management of the federation. It goes further than that because, you know, when we got to the Grand Prix weekend, the media day, George Russell spoke to the media about the alleged arrangement with the FIA that will update the driving guidelines. And it's again from Austin. We all remember the famous Verstappen-Norris incident from that race that prompted a lot of dialogue about, well, what are the rules of engagement? They will be updated allegedly after the season is over. They've not apparently finalized the dates on that yet. But the big one is, essentially, the Verstappen amendment will now be legal. You can run someone four wheels off if you're defending the inside line. Because according to
and you have to keep two wheels on yourself.
Yes, you have to keep two wheels on the track yourself. So yes, this does technically eliminate the Verstappen problem of what he did in Austin, where he basically dove bomb, hit the apex first, and then ran Norris off the track, including himself. In my opinion, I don't think this changes too much.
Trey, what do I keep saying, right?
You know,
you are making black and white a situation which is inherently gray. Because what does Max Verstappen do? He reads the rules in the most literal sense and then leads it up to the whistle.
I've said before, the genius part of Max is, and I explained this on the podcast at the time, he turns defense into attack. Like he remember when Austin happened, he was being passed around the outside by Norris, right? But Verstappen made the apex first, and in the eyes of the drivers, that meant Max has the right of way. And at that point, by this new amendment, Verstappen can
by the letter
run
of the law.
By the letter of the law, Max will now be able to run Norris off the track as long as he keeps two wheels on himself. It changes nothing. Because it changes still, next to nothing.
It's still trying to put a black and white rule on overtaking, which is inherently gray. Because every overtake is a little bit different with a little bit different context.
It's anti-racing, in my opinion.
You couldn't have said it better.
It's anti-racing.
What racing is about.
It's not a fair fight. It's not the beauty of motorsport is it should be a balance between offense and defense. The person defending should have an equal opportunity and, in my opinion, the right to space. The outside car no longer has a right to space when defending or attacking, like as Max proved in Austin. It's bullshit. It's anti-racing. Call it what it is.
The Gran Turismo 7 racing etiquette. You are now allowed to do things that make you look bad.
So, can we jump it ahead to Saturday?
Oh, God.
When with George Russell came out and said, you know, we want our guys to race each other hard. You know, we like good hard racing like this. So, why should we change the rules of engagement that much? Why should we make this illegal? And then he's screaming bloody murder that Verstappen almost caused him to have an airplane crash and yells for a penalty like crazy. Like,
isn't and he got it?
And he got it. And the ruling on this was quite strange because we got the document after the fact. Now, for those who don't know, Max got a very unusual one place grid penalty.
But not unprecedented.
Yeah, first in F1 since Sergio Perez got one at Mugello back in 2020 for causing a collision with another car in a practice session, hence why it was only one grid spot. First in 4 years, basically.
So, usually, and they acknowledge this in the document, this is a drop of three places for impeding another car / driving too slowly. They then list off an entire paragraph of mitigating circumstances that Verstappen had cars ahead of him, that Russell saw him the entire time, and then dropped it to one.
You know what, Cam? You're actually leaving shit on the table here.
Yeah.
Like, because the thing is, right, like they say that Verstappen clearly was under the delta between the two safety car lines, which is normally a penalty now because you're not allowed to deliberately go more than I think it's 10% more than the slowest, the fastest qualifying time on a non-push lap. But normally, if you've let a car through in good faith, they'll just wave that off. You know, that's been the story almost every single time this has come up since I think it was Monza that rule was first implemented in this latest form, basically. So they acknowledged and accepted that Verstappen had let Norris and Alonso through earlier on this lap. That normally is enough as a mitigating circumstance to remove any chance of that being an issue. They say that George Russell could clearly see Max the entire time, and both men were not on push laps. So I have to ask, what's the issue here?
I can't understand any of this, because you've given full mitigation on both sides and then said, okay, well, we're going to give you a reduced penalty.
The lowest penalty we can possibly give.
Well, they could have given him a $10,000 fine and a reprimand. Like, for instance, if he had jumped and aborted start and made the entire field go around the track. Marshall's on the track.
I'm
struggling to find something to say. It's very strange.
I found the explanation extremely bizarre, and I feel like it's going to set a very hazy precedent going forward, because now you can essentially be done for blocking on a non-push lap, depending on the circumstances. That's going to go over weird. Like, at what point do we now deem a car as blocking? I don't know anymore. I do not know what to block.
It wasn't a penalty explicitly for the block. It was a penalty for being under the driving unnecessarily slowly. But then they gave him the mitigation that he let two cars through in that area of the track.
Right. So why put that in the explanation of the stewards report if that hasn't had clearly no effect on the outcome? I don't get it. It makes it confusing, because you could make an argument on both sides that there's mitigation to have a penalty or not have a penalty, and instead you've come to the conclusion that you're going to hit Max with the smallest penalty you can give. In terms of grid penalties, you gave him a one place penalty that hasn't been seen in F1 for 4 years.
And what? Then it ultimately doesn't even and matter then it doesn't anyway. Matter George Russell spent all of Friday saying, like, we love Goodhart Racing, and then with Saturday, he's like, no, not like that.
No.
And then if you believe what's come out of the paddock, Max looked this man dead in the eye and said, oh, I'm just going to take my place back from you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which he did. That's the funniest part of the whole thing.
Again, it's Max Verstappen doesn't need to be a silly bitch out on track, because when he's a serious bitch, he can go do things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said to the man's face, I will just pass you into turn one tomorrow. And that's exactly what he did.
Anywhere that Russell was going to break, Max was going to break later.
It reminds me of, like, because American college football had what is colloquially known as rivalry week. All the big colleges, big rivals play one another. And a lot of these teams, a lot of the losing teams, got mad that the winning team would plant their university's flag in the middle of their turf. Ohio State, Michigan was a great example. And as all the discourse was just about, like
Michigan players got maced on the field as that was happening.
Yeah. To break up a fight, which is incredibly messed up.
If I were in a college football rivalry, I simply would not allow it to go to 8 overtimes.
If I was in a college football rivalry and I didn't want the other team planting their flag on my 50-yard line, I would simply win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Max stood on business in that regard. But, you know, this is only Saturday's stewarding nonsense.
Okay.
Oh, dear God.
Okay. I know. God, this is shoddy work to just leave this off in the break.
This is the kind of shit I expect from IndyCar stewarding.
Yeah, this was bad. And like, as RJ alluded to earlier, when Alex Albon's wing mirror fell off on the track, it was on the one overtaking zone on the track, the main straight, just off the racing line. If you got a two car side by side on the racing line, then you were almost certain that someone was going to hit it. I checked the race replay. It took 8 minutes of this wing mirror from the first time it was shown up on the live TV cameras to the moment Marie Marquez, the race director, calls for a safety car. And this is only after we've seen the onboard footage of Valtteri Bottas hitting said wing and the debris popping the two tires of Lewis Hamilton and Carlos Sainz. So even if we're giving him the benefit of the doubt here, it's over 5 minutes where that wing is on track. And this caused into something unprecedented. The FIA actually put out an explainer on Monday morning trying to add some nuance and logic into their decision-making as to what happened here. And they claimed that, well, if debris is normally off the racing line, we do not interfere. The problem is, it's far too close to the racing line for it to be ignored. And I'm sorry, Derek. And
they threw a double waved yellow.
They threw a double waved yellow, thinking that no one was going to hit it. And again,
what does double waved yellow mean?
Slow down and prepare to stop on the longest straightaway in the circuit.
So you clearly thought that it was worthy of a double waved yellow. Yeah, and that ended up having a huge effect on the complexion of the race because everyone else lifted except for Lando Norris.
Yeah, like, Lando definitely should have lifted. I get that. I completely understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he having to lift for a double wave yellow that could have just been a virtual safety car?
Because that's it. It should have just been a VSC. And their explainer after the fact says, well, the VSC, between the car spacing and where people were on track, the VSC would not have been effective.
They call it full safety car.
But it's debris. So
why was the debris there?
What you are admitting then is either that your VSC procedure is not an effective neutralizer of the race, or you just don't want to read your own damn rule book. Because all you need to do is call a VSC and issue a race director's instruction of keep to the left going down the main straight unless you're entering the pit lane.
This would be the most ideal circumstance. I know some people on the internet have suggested, why not just have a VSC and run the cars through pit lane? The problem with that is that it's not in the legislation of the rulebook to be able to do that, because the current rulebook says if you have a VSC, cars are not allowed to enter pit lane unless it's to change tires. This is probably the reason why they didn't call the VSC. That I can understand to a degree. Just call the full safety car then. I would rather see a race stopped out of an abundance of caution than let it continue and have that needless risk happen.
Yeah, we're not talking about NASCAR Phantom debris cautions. Like, we see the debris in high definition 4K.
Just issue a race director's instruction to the drivers to keep left going down the main straight. You literally have the rule book to do so. You have the rule, which was cited incorrectly as the defense of Abu Dhabi 2021 for things like this, and you choose not to use it.
I hate to be all conspiracy theory based here, but this felt like Marie Marquez not wanting to meddle with the race as it was going on.
It felt like this was a decision to make to ensure that the Constructors' Championship went to Abu Dhabi, because this did cause an enormous swing that allowed Ferrari to close up on McLaren.
How many times do we have to
if Carlos Sainz had also been in a position to finish competitively?
How many times do we have to come out of a weekend this year going, did the FIA just make an entertainment call?
The fact we've had to ask this question so many times is the exact problem with the FIA and it's stewarded. And look, I will say this on the record. In a vacuum, I didn't have any problem with Lando Norris getting a 10-second stop-and-go penalty. Yeah, you went through a double wave the other with 190 miles an hour. That is completely unacceptable. As we've said before, a double wave the yellow means slow down, and be prepared to stop. You made no sincere effort to slow down. There is no mitigating circumstances. I'm very disappointed in Andrea Stella, who's been in this sport for as long as some people here have been alive, and him saying that I think we should reduce the severity of this punishment. No, tell your fucking driver not to go through a double wave yellow at 190 miles an hour. There's an idea for you. Now, don't get me wrong. The idea of slowing down a double yellow on a main straight does seem like a bit of a token gesture, but this is a slam dunk penalty, and you can't even, and you can't accuse Marquez of not following precedent. The last time we had this was in Austria 2021 when Nikita Mazepin, remember him, and Nicholas Latifi did this exact same thing in Austria at the end of that race.
Dumb bitches going exactly.
And they ignored a double wave yellow, and they were both given 30-second time penalties because the punishment came too late in the day to administer it straight away. But the 10-second stop and go was converted into a 30-second time penalty, and both drivers were given the maximum 3 penalty points for it. It's a severe safety breach. I'll give Marquez that. He was bang on with that call on Norris. And, you know, I'll give him that as some degree of mitigation. But the whole point I'm getting around to here is this all could have been avoided if you had just done your job properly and called a safety car. Call the safety car.
That's the whole thing. If it was worthy of the double wave yellow and worthy of penalizing someone for speeding through the double wave yellow, you should have thrown a VSC or a full safety car. Simple as.
If you can't put them in the pit lane because of the VFC, just call the full safety car. No one's going to complain. We can see it. It's right there. It's obvious.
We have a clause in the rules for race director instructions. And it's like they're terrified to use it after Abu Dhabi 21. This is the real reason why that rule exists.
Acts of God. Being able to bend the rule for the greater good. There is genuine positive potential for that to, you know, be an outcome. In Spa 2021, when we had nearly undrivable conditions and the 4-hour event clock was running, Michael Massey, to his credit, did everything he could to try and get a race on. And if anyone's blaming him for that one, then they're idiots.
Yeah, you're under the gun of a genuine act of God, a situation where the race could not occur, but due to the way the rules lined up, we technically got a race. Like, just issue the instruction. Stop being scared of the judgment of us idiots all tuning in.
And
do
this,
the right thing for the race.
And this leads me back to the FIA as a whole, because going into Sunday morning, and look, I don't normally try to gas up my own too much on this show publicly, but my colleague Jonathan Noble did an incredible job pulling an interview with Mohamed Ben Sulayem out on Sunday morning of the race. And I spoke to John about this after the race was over, and he said the man was mad combative. He was defensive, he was bullish, he was combative. It more than comes off like that, and if you actually go out of your way to read the interview.
You don't even need to know that from Jonathan. All you need to do is read the article. When dudes just saying, sorry, it's none of their business regarding the drivers. Like,
do you literally work with them? You work with the GPDA. It is
their business. They're the ones on track. They're the ones putting on the show.
It sounds like somebody that would prefer not to work with the GPDA if he could help it. I mean, just today it came out that there's a proposal in place that would basically make Ben Sulayem above reproach.
Yeah. For those who don't know, because this story came out today, it looks like Mohamed Ben Sulayem, as president of the FIA, is trying to change the disciplinary process if someone is investigated internally, to the point where the president and the president of the ethics committee now have to make the call as to whether a further investigation is warranted. This is being done right now, where Mohamed Ben Sulayem is also under investigation for use of a quote-unquote president's fund of over $1 million that he may or may not have been using privately, allegedly.
Oh, the second one is that good.
Yeah, as Mike Cabela says in the chat right now, he really wants to say, I am the Senate.
How compelling. Please face the wall now. It's
There's a word for what Hamid Ben Suleim's trying to do here. It begins with C and ends in eruption.
You know what he should do? I think he should enact martial law.
It probably lasts longer than South Korea's did today.
Yeah, fair.
We are burning through stewarding goodwill at a geometric rate. Personally,
it's race direction, it's stewarding. I mean, sometimes we get the two mixed up sometimes, but nobody is left to do these jobs. And then we wonder why all the decisions seem so off is because there's so much turnover in these high pressured situations.
Had motorsport fans I genuinely respect complain to me in my mentions that Norris's penalty was so severe, and I said, you're not the problem. The problem is we've replaced the race director 22 rounds into a season. That's the issue. It starts from the fucking top. It starts with Ben Sulaim's leadership, and he sacked over a dozen high-ranking officials or people who have been sacked or they've left the job as a result of his leadership. So at what point do we say the rabbit's got the gun and say, hey, Mohamed Ben Sulaim, what if you're the one with the problem here?
Well, because that's the whole idea of his most recent move, is to make it so that he can't be punished for that internally.
He's trying to make moves so he cannot be punished internally while he himself is under investigation again for the second time this year. Because I haven't forgotten the Vegas and the Jeddah accusations from earlier this year that were ultimately dismissed, but it would also mark the second time in 2024 that Mohamed Ben Sulaim has faced an internal investigation by his own ethics committee.
It all leaves the FIA and their governance of Formula One in a very unstable position.
Yeah.
And that is, it's not just leaking out like into the public, it's spilling out on track now.
Yeah. And for those of you wondering, yes, we know that the FIA is more than just the Formula One World Championship. We get that. We understand that. But also,
Formula One is the primary battleground.
And also, look at what noted rally raid champion Mohamed Ben Sulaim, look at what the goodwill he's doing for World Rally Championship. Oh, it's still, even we have changed the technical regulations again going into the 2025 season, and we're still not sure what the future outlook is of the FIA World Rally Championship. I think the only reason the WEC does so well is because he's completely hands off of it.
Yeah, somehow the ACO, which I came onto this network ranting about with purple face, are the far more preferable dictator right now. And somehow NASCAR on the other side of the pond is also feeding into the positivity.
Yeah.
You realize how bad the situation is.
NASCAR, who just filed a lawsuit to try and dismiss the 2311 front row scandal that's been going on now for literally several months in regard to their charters. Look, all of this installs no confidence in the FIA's governance of the sport at this point. And look, I say this with full sincerity. I had genuine hope with Mohamed Ben Sulaim because the last two FIA presidents were people that I also did not like and did not trust. Jean Todt, who was a racist, and the way he talked about Asian people was absolutely reprehensible.
Which is crazy when you consider who his wife is.
Yeah. His wife who married down by all accounts. Not to get too personal about it on this show, but it's Michelle Yeoh. And Max Mosley, who do we even need to get started on Max Mosley as a mentalist?
Just refer to the Matt Eberflus lose media availability meme. It's very difficult to have confidence in the direction of the sport when FOM, you know what you're getting, right?
Yeah.
We know that they're a bunch of greedy fucks. We know that they are all in on being the turkeys not voting for Thanksgiving unless certain people aren't at the table, and then they're cool going in the oven.
Certain Italian-American turkeys are not allowed at this function.
And we've talked on the show in the past with, again, that degree of hope around MBS because
he was the outsider.
Well, in places, he has been very right in the way he's tried to approach the sport. But that does not absolve him of being just entirely incompetent.
He's, like, I'll give Mohammed bin Salim this. He has genuinely tried to make the FIA a more diverse institution. He's genuinely tried to make it more profitable so that he can actually give more back to things like grassroots motorsport. He has genuinely stood up to the F1 commercial wings bullshit in regards to Andretti and was not afraid to punch at the commercial rights holder when the Bloomberg story came out about allegedly F1 may have been on the brink of selling the sport to the Saudis, and talked about wanting to grow the grid in spite of the commercial wing's clear aim to not let that happen.
He said getting Cadillac into F1 brought him to hell and back. Oh, we could tell,
and
buddy.
I believe him. But at the same time, I absolutely believe him. It's been a complete shit show. And a lot of that is not on him. But that does not absolve him of making the FIA objectively a much more unstable place.
And
not having confidence in the direction of how the sport is being governed from a regulatory side, because we're burning through people. We're burning through rule books. No one seems to be happy. And at the center of this is a man who is under investigation and is making moves to prevent his investigation.
There is genuine fraud and corruption accusations that are potentially being layered at Mohammed bin Salim's feet. He has already had to apologize for sexist comments on his old website from when he got the gig on the Wayback Machine. He's already had accusations of bullying fellow members of staff from people that have since left the FIA since then and have firmly pointed the finger at his governance as to why. He's already faced two internal investigations, one ongoing as we speak, in regards to his position and potential race rigging and corruption underneath him. And let's not forget, he sat on his hands during the Christian Horner scandal earlier this year and encouraged Verstappen to try and make the story go away. This is the guy that's president of the FIA and arguably the most powerful person in motorsports.
I think you can drop the arguable from that. You're the president of the FIA. You'd govern so many series and so many different disciplines. He is the most powerful man in the sport.
Not fit for purpose.
Absolutely. Again, you got to take the good with the bad. And there has been a hell of a lot more bad recently than good. A lot more. And
it's not good enough.
No.
This offseason, the FIA needs to sit itself down with every high-profile figure it has left and get race control in order. This is getting ridiculous. Like, you need to address the driver guidelines and maybe don't listen to George Russell's opinion so strongly. He's in it for himself, not for the greater good of the sport.
We see how he races wheel to wheel.
Yeah, dive bombs for me and not for ye, etc. You need to sit down with race direction and you need to review the entire process, because I don't want to throw Rui Marquez under a bus after two races as race director, but so far he has not been good enough, and it makes me feel like he's been rushed into the role, and it's not entirely his fault, but he's covering for a system that has cleared out a lot of its most competent people, and it needs to have people sat down and get this figured out, because the on-screen product and what we're consuming as stakeholders of this sport is not right. It's not fit for purpose, and it's not good enough. It's that simple. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be. You've got a full off season in front of you. Like, thank God this season is almost over. If this was happening in Monaco, we'd be in big trouble.
I'm done. I am good with motorsport for the rest of the year. I used to get very sad when my favorite series would shut down on the year. Now I'm just feel relief.
We have the 24th race weekend of the year this weekend in Abu Dhabi. Thank God it's over.
Yippee.
We're racing, Cam, in the second weekend in December again. And we're doing it again next year.
Well, to tie off this stewarding section with a little bow here, I have to say, motorsport stewarding is putting together one of those Wilt Chamberlain stat lines for the Golden Cock this year.
55 points, 29 rebounds, 21 assists, 14 blocks, and 13 steals.
Miami Game 6 LeBron, man.
Yeah, it's an average Wemby stat line.
Like, Lewis Hamilton, Sideshow Bob, stepping on rakes. It started off badly with a false start, legitimate, was rolling when the lights went out, then got the puncture, and then sped into the pit lane. For those who don't know, if it's over 6 kilometers per hour into the pit lane, what the fuck is a kilometer? Drive-through penalty.
Yeah.
This marriage cannot come to an end soon enough.
But you know whose marriage has come to an end rather abruptly? Esteban Ocon's with Alpine. It's been reported that for Esteban Ocon to have taken part in the postseason test, the young driver test for Haas, his new team, the day after the season ends, he would have had to part ways with the Alpine Formula One team immediately. So Jack Doohan, second generation driver, will make his Formula One debut this weekend at Abu Dhabi. And Esteban Ocon will not be racing this Sunday. Gentlemen.
I did some digging on this, and it's now since been published on motorsport.com in regards to this. This was purely Flavio's call. You could have probably guessed already. I mean, I already had a hunch, because after the race, they asked Oliver Oakes about it, and Oakes didn't have a clue. He was like, "Oh, I've just heard his comments to the media that Ocon has said, and we need to sit down and talk about it," because Oakes did not know what was going on. According to, and shout out to my colleague Philip Clearan at motorsport.com, who did the reporting on this, the story goes that Ocon was called into Flavio Briatore's office the morning of the Grand Prix, and Briatore said to Ocon, to his face, "We are not going to clear you for the Haas test after the season is over unless you step down immediately." And Ocon, understandably, obliged to that request. So his time at Alpine is already done. He's not allowed to go back to the factory and say goodbye to this, to his fellow members of staff and his team at Enstone or Viri. He is done at Alpine with immediate effect.
And I know this divorce has been coming for a long time, because it feels like ever since the Monaco incident where Ocon rushed up the inside of Gasly, they collided, and it seemed like they were ready to fire him on the spot, that this was not a tenable relationship. I guess Ocon and Gasly, correct me if I'm wrong, did they swap cars mid-season? And all of a sudden, Esteban Ocon, who was having a great start to the season, has had a not-so-good finish to the season, which is now effectively over.
And he's basically been withheld the significant upgrades, because in case you missed it, Pierre Gasly got his for Las Vegas. He finished fifth.
Yeah, allegedly he has been on the heavier Alpine older spec chassis since Monaco.
Yeah, and he got none of the upgrades for this weekend, because they did have a major nose upgrade this weekend. And that kind of stuff you kind of expect for someone leaving a team to an extent, but this season has felt strangely additionally vindictive from Alpine towards Ocon since the announcement of that breakup.
It's
concerning how badly things have broken down, especially when Ocon was one of the best things about, perhaps one of the only good things about this team the last couple years.
He gave them their first win since Kimi at Australia. Look, I know technically Lotus is not the same as Alpine, as was the same as Renault. It's Team Enstone. It is the same team. Esteban Ocon given that win in Hungary in 2021. I know it wasn't all on pace alone, but that did happen. And for a guy that so many people thought, oh, they're just hiring them because the French shareholders want a French driver on the team, he more than held his own against Fernando Alonso, a notorious teammate killer at the time.
Went blow for blow with him pretty much the whole time they were together.
And the thing is, with the relationship with Ocon and Gasly, like, if anything, like, we were worried that Ocon and Gasly wouldn't get together. They got along well enough out of this whole thing.
They get along better than some of these teammates on this grid.
They hugged each other after their double podium in Brazil, and it was one of the genuine, most wholesome moments of the 2024 season. Ocon's been there for half a decade now, and he's been one of the few constant goods of Team Enstone since then. He's been a stable part of the team. He wrote a lengthy goodbye tweet. It's sad that it has to be a goodbye tweet in regards as well as the helmet he would have worn if he was allowed to race this weekend in Abu Dhabi. There's one key line in there that I'd like to point out because it's its own separate paragraph, and it reads, quote, "It has not been an easy year on track for the team, and the second part of the season has been especially difficult for various reasons."
He is trying very, very hard not to go like full, like, late 2000s disgruntled pro wrestler shoot interview that you spent $25.
Yes. It's very concerning, and I don't know what it is about Esteban Ocon where he keeps getting summarily thrown out of teams. The fact that it's happened again, and this is, again, this is a Renault team that was very, let's say, uncouth with driver relations with Daniel Ricciardo. When that went south with Kevin Magnussen in 2016, to the point where they were so convinced that they would pick up other people right up until the point where they were forced to re-sign Jolyon Palmer for 2017. It's just another, it feels, in a long line of what the hell is Renault doing running this team?
But this has especially got, like, Flavio Briatore's fingerprints of just, like, it's my way or the highway because I'm the only one that can apparently make this team work.
And I mean, it's more than obvious. I mean, I said it from day one when he was announced to be joining the team, and we've only seen evidence that backs this up. Flavio Briatore is no special advisor. This man is pulling the strings.
It's his principal, practically an all but name, it feels like.
Oliver Oakes is a puppet GM at this point. And I feel bad for him because this is his first team principal role in Formula One. He's only 31 years of age. He's very young in that sense. And it's basically not. The man was completely in the dark about this. Flavio basically took the bull by the horns and fired him.
Special advisors don't usually have the position to unilaterally fire someone.
Or get on the press releases.
It's very strange. Fair enough to Esteban to actually make that choice to head over to Haas anyway.
I mean, you know what? It's in his best interest. Like, we've mocked a lot of these teams over the years, Haas being one of them. Right now, Haas looks a hell of a lot more stable than Alpine does right now.
Haas look like the model midfield team of Formula One this year. Imagine saying that 12 months ago.
Yeah. And Alpine are likely going to get sixth place in the end, almost sheerly. I don't want to say it was dumb luck because of how Brazil turned out, but unfortunately, those freakish weekends when the scoreboard is that low and that tight can be worth tens of millions of dollars. And it looks like Alpine essentially got away with it this year.
They're getting it off a couple big results, not on consistency. For damn sure.
No, yeah, and the thing is, like,
it's the puncher's chance argument, and they actually hit the knockout blow.
Pierre Gasly before Sao Paulo. His best result of the year was a couple of ninth places. He's since had a third and a fifth.
Mm-hmm. Like, but Gasly has, what, 24 points for the year? And, like, the majority of them have come around in the last three Grand Prix? Like,
yeah, two of the last three, because he retired in Las Vegas with his engine going extra mecha chrome mode.
And, he was tracking for points in that race, too.
Like, these last three races are going to be the overwhelming majority of their points haul on the year.
Yeah, without doubt, it is. It's fucking
four races.
Yeah, it is fucky, and I don't like it. I don't like the way Esteban Ocon's been treated. He demands more respect than what he's been treated with by Flavio Briatore. I'm not saying Alpine as a whole, because I don't think it's the whole organization. I think it's specifically Flavio.
It does remind me of another one-win wonder in Formula One who also got the shit end of the stick and being sacked early by Flavio Briatore.
Go on.
Yarno Trulli.
Yeah.
Yarno Trulli, the second his form started to dip midway in the 2004 season, it seemed like it was just curtains for him. And, you know, he had that deal with Toyota already in place. So they just decided, you know what? We don't need you anymore. You can take your ball and go to Toyota with it. Get the hell out of my sight.
It feels like a precise repeat of that, given we knew that Esteban was going to Haas relatively early this year.
And I would say, allegedly, it's also put a lot of pressure on Jack Doohan, who now makes his Grand Prix debut this weekend as opposed to next March. There's allegedly talks of a performance break clause in Doohan's deal that might kick in after five races next year. So allegedly, Doohan's already under pressure. The good news for Doohan is that allegedly Alpine have also now not interested in Franco Colapinto,
along with everyone else.
Yeah, apparently everyone's just exited the Franco Colapinto hype train has emptied itself at Paddington Station because of his current run of form, now having been involved in four crashes in the last three weekends. Who would have thought it? The flash in the pan has been a bit of a mirage, but so we'll have to wait and see how that plays out in the long run. Also looking like it's going to be Sergio Perez's last Grand Prix weekend in Formula One this weekend. It looks like Christian Horner has allegedly told Perez, jump or we're going to have to push you.
Take this ambassadorial role or we're going to make you show these Kit Kats and Tequila Patron.
Well, and that's exactly it. Like Perez kept citing he has a deal for next year and the James Hinchcliffe monkey paw curls.
Yeah, it's like you've got a deal, but that doesn't mean they have to honor it.
He'll honor it in Red Bull colors, munching on a Kit Kat next year, which frankly will be the best thing that Perez has done since March. He didn't, you know, maybe he was waiting for that green light at the end of pit lane to turn greener.
That was embarrassing.
So wrapping things up. Who do you think takes sixth place in the Constructors' Championship? Because we think Alpine has got away with it, but it would be just something if them gritty Haas pull it out right at the end.
There is a bit of science to this. We know where Haas gets a lot of their car from, where they get their engine from. Ferrari and Ferrari adjacent vehicles usually go very well at Abu Dhabi.
They do. But they need a 6-point swing to overcome Alpine, and Alpine are in good form at the moment with Gasly. It's
not undoable. I do think Alpine are going to suffer on the straights given their deficit of horses.
I've got a feeling Alpine's probably already done enough, unfortunately.
Maybe.
Does anybody like a spicy RB outside shot? No, just fine.
That car looked like a log ride this weekend.
Yuki Tsunoda was like the focus of everybody's highlight reel in that race. Just the way that like the Atlanta Falcons were the San Francisco 49ers' entire highlight reel in the 80s.
He got the pinata treatment into turn one from like four different drivers. And that was the better RB day because Liam Lawson, rough. You know what it would take though? Because the thing is, 6 points is enough. They really need help from a top team having an issue, maybe on lap one or having someone down the field. Maybe Kevin Magnussen, in his last act of heroism, just wipes out half the grid and both Alpines coming out of the first chicane.
Well, you know what he did post to his Instagram? Please tell me that this is not like...
Was it the red bowling shoes?
God, I'm just realizing that this is this... It's the red bowling shoes, but now I'm starting to realize that...
Well, Dakira, it's fake.
Golly! Because it looked like he posted an Instagram image of Red Bull.
Believe that was real?
Then I looked and said, wait a minute, this tense feels Photoshop, and this looks like AI slapping. Oh, no.
Yeah, I think he should honor his future drive of the BMW M Hybrid V8 and just spin that shit in a straight line so that Nico Hülkenberg can get a beneficiary safety car 4 laps from the end of this race, and we can go green without having cars unlapping.
Yeah, and the other question I had in the script was McLaren or Ferrari for the constructors. There's a 21-point gap McLaren's in front going into this one. I think the difference is probably a bit too much for Ferrari to rein them in. They tried. They made a great effort at the end, Ferrari, but that middle block of the year is going to come back to bite them hard. It cost them the constructors' title. There's no getting around it.
As opposed to every niggling little issue that McLaren had for like 15 races this year.
Yeah.
But their ceiling was higher. Has been spectacularly silly. Like, we're going to have the car that was the quickest overall for at least 2/3 of the season scrape out a championship by maybe a race win's worth of points. And a car that was the best car for maybe 2 or 3 races across the year finished 2nd with a gap to 3rd.
Again, there is above 0% odds that Woking leaves this year with nothing. And if they do, it is a righteous failure as a season by McLaren if that happens.
It is. Is it floppy worthy? Is that front row?
I'd throw it in the mix.
I think you'd have an argument. I wasn't expecting McLaren to come in and swipe the constructors this year. But also,
it's bad.
To be in the form they have. Hey, guess what, Dre? Forget the Max won it in the first 5 races argument. If the championship started in Miami, he would have won it a race early.
You would have had a 28-point lead going into this race.
This is gravy.
In regards to the Lando fandom, is this your king? Is this your king? Honestly.
MasterCard McLaren is hitting different.
I know you do not get to go out of your way and claim that they never had a shot at this. That's nonsense. We would never have had papaya rules if you sit there and try to tell me that you didn't think you had a chance to win it all. Bollocks.
You won the constructors.
Yeah. You got the big one, probably.
Your winning driver in the constructor in the Drivers' Championship won in the 3rd car on the constructors. That hasn't happened for how many years? 40?
40 years.
With Nelson Piquet back in 84. They can talk about that.
Yeah.
They can talk about that at dinner, along with probably an assortment of slurs.
Yeah, great. Thank God Formula One's final round is this weekend in Abu Dhabi. We can finally get this shit out of the way. And we can talk about some more fun stuff like season reviews.
I want to get to season review season already. Come on. We got guests in the works. Soon.
Very soon.
We got an award show to give out. We got to figure out a way to replace the Autosport Top 50 episode due to reasons.
Leave it. Leave it.
We'll be back next week to review Abu Dhabi here on Motorsport 101. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison, and they've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Go follow us on good Twitter. Leave bad Twitter behind.
RJ O'Connell at bsky.bsky.social.
Just find my name.